Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, March 21st, 2016. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll highlight Perseverance Theater's current production, In the Next Room, or The Vibrator Play, with actors Tiffany Cooper and James Sullivan. Representative Garen Tarr from Anchorage will be here to highlight the second annual Food Security Awareness Week film, Just Eat It, at the Rockwell. Jeff Smith from The Learning Connection will be here to talk about free computer classes. And we'll learn about the National Guard Alaska Military Youth Academy with guest Bob Roses. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music and more right here on a Juno afternoon. Currently 51 degrees at the Juno Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Stephen Emmons, in for Antonia Gonzalez. A protective designation for part of Arizona's Oak Flat area prompted a word battle between one tribe and one of the state's congressional representatives. Representative Paul Gosar originally issued a statement calling the designation of the Oak Flat campground on the National Register of Historic Places bogus. He said Oak Flat has never been a historic site and calls the protection advocates environmental extremists. In response, late last week, the San Carlos Apache tribe applauded the historic listing. The written statement faults Gosar for what they say is a zeal for destruction by siding with foreign mining interests over protection for the area several tribes consider sacred. The site is near a copper mine proposed by Resolution Copper. The historic designation does not prevent the mine from going forward. Also in Arizona, Native American protesters were among the dozens of people who shut down the main highway access to a rally over the weekend for Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump. Police ultimately arrested three protesters, but the crowd eventually moved off the road to allow cars to pass by. The rally ahead of Tuesday's Arizona primary elections was in a suburb of Phoenix. Meanwhile, a town hall meeting by Democratic candidate Bernie Sanders at a Navajo Nation casino near Flagstaff drew little opposition. Sanders made four campaign appearances in Arizona in recent days. Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton planned a campaign appearance Monday afternoon, and her husband, former President Bill Clinton, spoke Tuesday in Tucson on behalf of his wife. Officials with the University of New Mexico say they have no immediate plans to change the school's official seal, despite claims by a group of students that it's offensive. KRQE-TV in Albuquerque reports the students associated with the UNM Kiva Club and the activist group Red Nation object to the seal honoring a Spanish conquistador and a settler of European descent. They have not yet submitted a formal request to change the seal. To make a point, students drafted a new seal graphic that has the same two figures standing on a pile of Native American bones. The seal has been remade three times in the university's history. After a struggle that's lasted more than a decade, ancestral remains long removed from the Kodiak archipelago will soon return home. KXMT's Kayla DeRoche has the story.
Archaeologists in the 1960s did an excavation of a graveyard that was eroding onto a beach on Chirikov Island, south of Kodiak Island, and removed the remains of approximately 150 people, according to the Aleutic Museum. The remains ended up at Indiana University. The Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, or NAGPRA, requires that federally funded institutions like universities and museums inform tribes if they're holding artifacts or remains connected to them, which was not done in this case. The extent of Indiana University's research on the remains is unknown, except for a professor's observations in several of her research papers. Director of the Indiana University NAGPRA office, Jane Lee Thomas, has been assisting with returning the collection to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The agency manages the federally owned land of Chirikov Island. Lee says it's taken years for Fish and Wildlife to finally take control of the remains.
And that's where we are feeling frustrated, because the NAGPRA process can't begin until that happens. Really, until the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has the human remains, has access to them, and has the project documentation, you know, we can't move forward. They can't create an inventory for human remains they don't have.
Lice traveled to Indiana along with Army Corps representatives to retrieve the remains in early March. She represents the Shunack tribe, who have claims of cultural affiliation with the remains on geographic grounds. Lice says they hope the repatriation process will be completed by 2018, and they will finally be able to bury the Chirikov ancestors. In Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.
For National Native News, I'm Stephen Emmons.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. For 45 years, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at NARF.org and join the fight for Native rights. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 21st, 2016. Scott Burton, your host, and I'm lucky enough to have in the studio with me now Tiffany Cooper and James Sullivan. They are both actors in the Vibrator play or in the next room over at Perseverance. Welcome to the show, Tiffany and James.
Thank you. Pleasure to
so
be here.
So nice to have you here. I've had a chance to see the play, and I laughed a lot.
Well, good. You're supposed to. You could.
But as you said to James, it has a lot of meat on the bones.
Yeah, it's a wonderful play, and it's got some great comedy in it, and we're having a lot of fun playing all the different crazy things that happened during the course of this during the course of the play. But I think the really wonderful thing about this play is that Sarah Rule is a wonderful playwright. She's taken on a very silly subject, taking on what craziness people go. Trying to find fulfillment, trying to basically have sex, and the fun they have trying to figure out what they actually want out of life, and she has a lot of fun. But she also, she covers a lot of ground on what it means to, to be a couple. How do you make a couple work? How do you make your life work? Are you fulfilled? Are you actually, enjoying your life, your relationship? How do you make happiness occur? And that's basically what she's talking about in this play, and it's a wonderful time to be a part of it.
Tiffany, tell me a little bit about your character.
My character is Elizabeth. She is a very strong, intelligent, not really educated, religious woman who has just lost her child, and she's grieving that, and she's thrust upon the position of becoming a wet nurse for the Givings. And it's a very challenging time for her because, again, coming to work every day and being reminded that of what you've lost is just tremendously hard for her. She's a warm individual. She's someone who understands her place at that time, but is challenged in how she will also move forward in life because she has lost her relationship with God. She doesn't trust God because when she did trust him, everything was going great, and then she lost her son, and so her faith has been challenged. And I find it interesting playing Elizabeth, because we don't know at the end of the play if she regains her relationship with God, that she make peace with God again.
Right, and that's just one of the themes that Rule mm-hmm. is wrestling with in the play.
Right, there's so much going on in these plays.
So much. She also talks about, Sarah Rule also mentions the topic of intimacy. You can have sexual relations and no intimacy. And so, the main character, Mrs. Givings, is longing for intimacy. And she's finding that she's becoming more and more alone as the play comes, as it moves along. And at the end, she finds that intimacy with her husband.
Tell us a little bit about Dr. and Mrs. Givings. The play sort of revolves around these two, right?
Yeah, and we have two wonderful actors playing them. We have Torsten Hillhouse is coming from New York, and we have Christina Apathy here in Juno playing the doctor's wife. And it's a wonderful time. The play opens where Mrs. Givings is having trouble breastfeeding, and her husband / doctor / inventor, who, back in the day, the setting is in the 1880s, and at the birth of electricity, mm-hmm. and the doctor is working out of his house, as many doctors did. And he's invented a new invention, and he starts taking on clients to help women and, many people deal with hysteria. And his wife at that time, who is having difficulty breastfeeding, feeling very alone, Her husband is very busy with his new clients, with his new invention. She is, you could say, you know, we talked about, you know, the difficulties that any new couple might have or a new mother might be going through at that time. And it's just a wonderful setup for this really interesting couple as they try and come to terms with their life and their relationship.
And your character's wife is sort of having the same problems, and that's where you two come in, right?
Yes, my wife is ill. She's very sick. Very, very sick. She is suffering from hysteria. I've taken her to Dr. Givings to fix her. My character is a little on the, I guess you could say, a little arrogant, a little on the paternalistic side, a little chauvinistic, but a man of his time and his age and of his day. And it's very interesting. He doesn't, you know, he has no idea what's going on with his wife, and he just wants things to change and get things back on track.
And Tiffany, your character, Elizabeth, mm-hmm. while she may be wrestling God, she is not suffering from hysteria.
No, she is not. She knows her place, and she's a very confident woman. Again, her faith is challenged, but she still believes in some way of routine of believing in God. So, she's skeptical when she has to get checkup from Dr. Givings to make sure she's okay to become a wet nurse, and she's even not okay with that. But I would say that she's someone who doesn't need the vibrator.
And there's a pretty funny line or a series of lines, I think, when she's in conversation with Mrs. Daldry and Mrs. Givings,
yes.
right? And she tells them facts of life.
I just love that line when I ask Mrs. Daldry and Mrs. Givings, I say, those sensations that you are describing, they're not from having relations with your husbands? And they're like, oh, no, heavens no. I mean, the
shocked.
Innocence, the age of innocence. You know, we can't even imagine that today.
Right.
You know, imagine being in a time where there are no words for what you're feeling. We can't even imagine that.
What are some of the other themes you'd say the play is wrestling with?
I'd say a big part of it is intimacy. Sarah Rule's mm-hmm. taken on the two subjects of sex and breastfeeding, these two subjects that people aren't, I mean, even today, people aren't comfortable talking about it in public. And she's taken those very two subjects and turned a whole play around them. Mm-hmm. And it's an ingenious thing she's really done by putting it into the 1880s. It makes it a little safer, I think, for audiences. We kind of look at these characters. Oh, they're from the past. They're so silly. They're so ignorant in the sense of they don't have modern science behind, you know, to inform them about what's really going on and all the issues that they have. But when you're sitting there and listening to the play, every person can relate with these, you know, we all have desires. We all long for intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
We all long for that special someone, and making sure that special someone still thinks you're special. And that's what this play is about. And I think everyone can relate to it. It's really wonderful how the way she's put it together. Mm-hmm. And it's funny.
It's really funny. It's quite relevant. That's why I love it, too, because, you know, it is in the context. She's taken these very important topics and put it in a funny setting.
Yeah.
So it's safe, but yet makes you think, and that's what theater should do, make you think.
How do you think Rule makes comedy so effectively? What is it? Is it the rhythm? Is it the writing itself? What are some things that you've noticed being inside this play, inside her work?
I think it's the combination of everything.
She really doesn't try to write punchlines in any of her pieces, yet there are moments where just naturally the silliness of the situation comes out, and we have those kind of big kind of punchline laughs during the performance. She's really writing a script that has these awkward situations where these people, you know, where the audiences can't help but laugh, you know, because it just, you know, that's the way real life when things was that ridiculous. And it just ends up happening because she did the same thing with Clean House. People taught, and that was the subject of old age and domesticated workers who are not being treated well. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of, you know, under the subject matter for her play was very serious. And yet it was funny as can be, really. She has a wonderful, wonderful way about her. And she tackles these kind of heavy subjects without it ever feeling heavy. And that's really unique. She's a great voice here in America right now. Yeah.
How many more opportunities do we have to see the play?
Oh, yes. We have 2 more weeks,
yes,
Juno.
2 more weeks. Juno, get on it.
Yeah, so this week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 7:30 mm-hmm. and Sunday at 4. And then the next week, we have an extra. We added a Wednesday night performance. So it's Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30. And we had to change. We're not doing our last Sunday matinee. We've changed it to a Saturday matinee. So that last Saturday, April 2nd, it's a 2 p.m. and a 7:30 p.m. Performance. And then we take it on to Anchorage a week after that. So
taking it on the road.
Yeah, come on down.
So that's one way people can support Perseverance, right?
That's right.
Coming to the show.
That's the best way.
That's the best way, right? But how else can people support Perseverance?
Nice segue there, Scott. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Not planned at all.
Oh, yeah. We are trying. No, Perseverance is in the middle of its wonderful yearly travel raffle, and we've started selling those tickets. They're $10 a ticket. And the drawing will be on June 4th, so you got plenty of time. But we want you to please support us. We've got 25 wonderful prizes. The grand prize, I'll read that one off. The grand prize, 2 round-trip tickets on Alaskan Airlines to anywhere. So that means either Hawaii or Cordova.
Where would
your
you
choice,
go, James?
Right Cordova. Okay. Cordova, yeah, mm-hmm. right? Who wants to go
Where
to Hawaii?
Where would you go?
Mm. Oh, I won't say.
Plus 2,000 cash, and there's some wonderful opportunities here. And then, like I said, there are 25 prizes. They're all for the different eateries in Juneau, some in Anchorage, different tourist events. It's a great thing. It's mm-hmm. a lot of chances to win 25 prizes. So if you don't win the grand prize, you got a great chance of winning something fun.
It's win-win. You're supporting Perseverance Theater, and you might get this bonus.
Heck yeah. We like it. We've been really trying to build up our support in different ways as we try and build up our programming around the Perseverance. And, next year we're also starting a subscription. We're doing 7 shows on the main stage next year, so it's a 6-show subscription package and a holiday show that we're doing next year. We're still doing our travel raffle. We're trying to expand and doing more fun things with education across Juneau.
Great.
We're bringing shows. This past year, I think most people know that we've taken shows now to Anchorage, but we'll also be taking one show to the Valdez, to the theater conference that takes place in June. We were able to take our voices back to over to Huna for one performance. So there's a lot of different things going on. And
how is that traveling for actors like you? Is it exciting and fun? It seems like, wow, we're taking a whole production on the road to another city. It seems like a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, but it's essential because, remember, Perseverance is the state theater. So, they want to hire and employ artists across the state to tell interesting and engaging, thought-provoking stories. So it's important to be able to take the stories and then take them to different cities and share it to the people around.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, great. Thank you both for coming on the show today. Thanks for your wonderful performances.
Thank you.
Anything else you want to add?
I would like to add, one of the reasons I love Perseverance Theater is it contributes to education and literacy. For example, watching characters talk back and forth in the theater is tricky. It requires sharp attention, quick mental shifts, and nimble language skills. It teaches us about the human motivation psychology. For example, in historical plays, we get lessons in leadership and government. In contemporary plays, we learn about people and cultures in different parts of our own country and other countries. Studies have shown that students who participate in theater do better in schools. Making plays together also draw kids out of their shells. It helps them learn to socialize in a productive and healthy way. This is what Perseverance is great at, capturing stories that represent the human condition. The bottom line is Perseverance is the state theater that supports and hires artists through the state and is not just a small town theater company. It's a company that supports artists from Juneau, Anchorage, Fairbanks, and Skagway and other cities throughout the state.
And where should somebody go to support Perseverance right now?
You can go down and buy a ticket at the Jack or at Hearthside Books, or go on our website at ptalaska.org, or you can call in at 463-TIXS.
James Sullivan, Tiffany Cooper, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you, Scott. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Spinderella cut it up one time. Come on.
Let's talk about sex.
Comes from the Juno Empire, sponsoring the Juno Job Fair and Career Expo on Wednesday, March 30th from noon until 5 p.m. at Centennial Hall. This event is open to the public. Information at facebook.com/JunoJobCareerExpo2016. Support for this station comes from the Augustus Brown Swimming Pool, located at 1619 Glacier Avenue in downtown Juno, offering aqua aerobics on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 11 a.m. until 12 p.m., and stretch aquatics on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 11 a.m. until 11:45 a.m. Schedules are available online at juno.org/parkrec/pool. More information at 586-5325.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Monday, March 21st, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 24 minutes after the hour. I've been joined in the studio now by Representative Garen Tarr. She's from Anchorage. And we might talk a little politics, probably not more, about food security. Welcome to the show, Representative Tarr.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thank you.
Yeah. Will you start by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thanks for the question. I am in my fourth year as a legislator, and I'm from the Anchorage area. I'm proud to represent the neighborhoods of Mountain View, Airport Heights, and Russian Jack, and love to tell people about Mountain View being the most diverse neighborhood in the United States. So we hope anybody who's up in Anchorage will come by the neighborhood and visit the many different stores with cultural foods and just kind of experience what that diversity looks like in Alaska. We think it can be a model community for how we integrate as we become a more and more diverse country and how we do a good job of that. So love spending time down here in Juneau for the session, and love how much the Juneau community welcomes us to be here.
Okay. Among other things I noticed in your educational resume is botanist.
Yes, I am a botanist. I think probably the only botanist in the legislature. That's what brings me to the issue of food security and why I think it's a, you know, have some experience in my professional career that tells me this is an important issue to work on.
Okay. And so as part of that, is it this Wednesday at the Rockwell? Is that when you're going to show the film?
This Tuesday,
Tuesday
night at the Rockwell. We're having our second annual Food Security Awareness Week. We know in Alaska we're food insecure as a state. We only have about a 3 to 5 day supply of food in our grocery stores. And this was in everybody's mind up in the South Central region earlier this winter when one of the boats was not able to get in. And you saw people posting all over Facebook and in the news that the store shelves were becoming bare. So as a state, we're food insecure. And we know that 1 in 7 people in Alaska struggle with hunger. And so on a more personal sort of level, we know that there are many Alaskans who are food insecure themselves and their families and struggling with finding enough food to eat on a day-to-day basis.
Okay. And I've heard in energy circles when people are talking energy, before we start talking about creating more energy, we should actually talk about saving some energy. And that there's sort of a parallel with what you're doing, right? It's maybe we should make more food, but we should be using the food we have, right? That's a big part of it?
A big part of it. And I think people are amazed when they hear the numbers. 133 billion pounds, billions with a B, billion pounds of food is thrown away every year in the United States. It's enough to feed 185 million people, so about half the country. That's enough food to feed about half the country being thrown away every year. And beyond the food and how many people that could feed, we know food is transported thousands of miles on average before it gets to your plate. So a lot of energy use and the transportation that's unnecessary. We know that, you know, people are spending money and food groups and things like that are needing to provide food for hungry people. Well, couldn't some of this wasted food be used for that purpose? The Food Bank of Alaska actually receives about 5 million pounds of donated food every year, and we're hoping to bring awareness to this issue. It's been in the news because last September, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack announced the first ever food waste reduction goal for the United States of reducing food waste by 50% by the year 2030, and we feel like we're working with our partner groups in the communities to host the Alaska Food Waste Challenge, if you will, and we hope we can be a part of that solution.
Okay, and on Tuesday you're going to be showing Just Eat It. Tell us a little bit about that film.
This is a great documentary. It's award-winning, so hopefully others have helped us in picking a good film. It chronicles a six-month period in the life of a couple, Jen and Grant, who decide to just eat discarded food. And they're able to go for 6 months just eating food that has been thrown away. And some of the things that they talk about, just the finding out that on average a fourth of the food that is bought is never eaten. On a per-person basis, they say about 20 to 25 pounds thrown away every month. And they found things like $13,000 worth of organic chocolate bars in looking through these discarded foods. So the monetary value is huge. The impact on resource use is huge. And the fact that these discarded items that are still good and usable could be better used by feeding hungry Alaskans and hungry Americans.
Well, hopefully all of us will make it on Tuesday. If we can't, can you give us a few pointers on what we can do as individuals to help reduce our waste?
Yes, these are great, easy things that everybody can do. Some of the suggestions include just how you buy food to really plan out your meals better so that you don't have these items that you have no purpose for. I know I'm very guilty of that, and I'm trying to do better. There are suggestions about things we can do with schools. Right now, student lunch periods are pretty short, just about 20 minutes. They found if you increase that to 30 minutes, it can cut about a third of the waste that's coming out of schools because kids just tend to eat a little bit slower.
Who doesn't want longer recess anyway?
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. So this would be popular with the kids. things like making sure that you freeze items, that you're really following, you know, the food that you have in your own refrigerator and where you can save it if you're not going to be able to use it, freezing it. Composting is another activity that both schools and individuals can participate in so that you're, you know, at least making that turn into energy and a resource that can be used elsewhere. So a lot of easy things in our personal lives. And, of course, donating food is always an option if you have items and you know, okay, I've learned that nobody likes the kidney beans in my house. Well, take that to the food bank and we'll find a hungry Alaskan that can use that.
Okay. Give us the details again about Tuesday night.
Yes, 7 p.m. at the Rockwell, downstairs in the Rockwell Gallery. And we'll have some local representatives there to talk about their efforts. And, again, we hope to see a lot of people. It's a free family event, and it would be great. I think we all have a role to play, and I really appreciate you giving me the chance to make sure more people know about this and cover the topic. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anytime. I think we covered it. Anything else you want to add?
No, I just hope to see a lot of people tomorrow night. And please feel free to get in touch with our office. We have a resolution on this issue to sort of raise that awareness about our Alaska Food Waste Challenge. And we'd love to have support from the Juneau community.
And what's the best way to get a hold of your office?
465-3424. That is our local number, and we'd love to hear from folks.
Or come say hi tomorrow night.
Or come say hi. That'd be great.
Representative Garen Tarr from Anchorage, thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 21st of March, 2016. It's the birthday of Johann Sebastian Bach, Eisenach, Germany, 1685. He came from a musical family. Both his parents died by the time he was 10. He was taken in by his older brother, an organist, taught him to play keyboard instruments. Sang in the boys' choir. By the time he was 18, got his first job as a church organist. Bach often got in trouble. He got into fights with people, had a short temper, had a habit of wandering off to nearby towns to hear other famous organists. He was the court organist at Weimar for several years, wasn't happy there, tried to resign. The Duke had him thrown into prison for a month, moved to Leipzig, where he worked for the rest of his life and composed his major works, despite all the difficulties he had. Wrote The Passion According to St. Matthew, the Mass in B minor, the Goldberg Variations. It's the birthday of Ved Mehta, born in Lahore, India, now in Pakistan, in 1934. Got a form of meningitis when he was 4, which caused him to go blind. Left India at the age of 15, attended the Arkansas School for the Blind, then Pomona and Harvard University, where he met William Shawn, the editor of The New Yorker, who hired him as a staff writer. Author of many books, including most recently All for Love, a memoir about his love affairs with 4 different women. And it's the birthday of a writer who loved the suburbs, Phyllis McGinley, born in Ontario, Oregon, 1905, who wrote in her poem Suburbia to Thee, I Sing, deluded people that we are, we do not realize how mediocre it all seems. I think that someday people will look back on our way of life with nostalgia and respect. In a world of terrible extremes, it will stand out as the important medium, suburbia, of thee I sing. Here's a poem for today by Barbara Crooker, Ordinary Life. This was a day when nothing happened. The children went off to school, remembering their books, lunches, gloves. All morning, the baby and I built block stacks in the squares of light on the floor, and lunch blended into nap time. I cleaned out kitchen cupboards, one of those jobs that never gets done, then sat in a circle of sunlight and drank ginger tea, watched the birds at the feeder jostle over lunch's little scraps. A pheasant strutted from the hedgerow, preened and flashed his jeweled head. Now a chicken roasts in the pan, and the children return, the murmur of their stories dappling the air. I peel carrots and potatoes without paring my thumb. We listen together for your wheels on the drive. Grace before bread and at the table actual conversation, no bickering or pokes. And then the drift into homework. The baby goes to his cars, drives them along the sofa's ridges and hills. Leaning by the counter, we steal a long, slow kiss, tasting of coffee and cream. The chickens diminished to skin and skeleton, the moon to a comma, a sliver of white. But this has been a day of grace in the dead of winter, the hard, cold knuckle of the year, a day that unwrapped itself like an unexpected gift, and the stars turn on, order themselves into the winter night. A poem by Barbara Crooker, Ordinary Life, from her selected poems, published by Future Cycle Press, and used by permission here in the Writer's Almanac, supported by LegalZoom, resources to help protect intellectual property, including trademark, copyrights, patents, and independent attorney consultations. Legal help is at LegalZoom.com. And by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support comes from Alaska Robotics, featuring comic authors Kate Beaton, Ryan North, Kazuo Kibuishi, and Raina Telgemeier in Juneau this April for a mini-comic convention and artist camp. Registration information at minicon.alaskarobotics.com.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Monday, March 21st. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 20 minutes until the top of the hour. And joining me in the studio now is Jeff Smith. He's the Adult Basic Education Coordinator at CIRC. Welcome to the show, Jeff.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, nice to see you. For folks that don't know what CIRC is, tell us about it.
So CIRC is an educational nonprofit in Juneau, and they serve the entire state. And my program specifically is for adult education, and it's a regional program serving Southeast. And we have tutors all throughout the region. We have tutors right now in Gustavus and Haines, Ketchikan, Sitka, Petersburg, and Yakutat. And, of course, we have the Learning Connection here in Juneau downtown at 210 Ferry Way.
Right there across from Marine View, isn't it?
Yeah, right there.
A nice facility. I've been there before. A nice atmosphere to hang out in.
Yeah, it's really a great environment. Really right now, too. We have such a great group of people in there right now, and it's really a nice, strong sense of community in there, a comfortable place to learn and work with people, and it's a really comforting environment.
Yeah, so right across from Marine View, around the corner from the Gold Town Nickelodeon, right there by City Hall.
Yeah, right, nice past spot. City Hall.
Thinking about that location, what are some classes you have coming up or going on right now?
Yeah, so coming up in April, we're going to have some new classes starting. April 11th, we're having a writing class start. We're calling it Write About It. And we also are having some new ESL, English as a Second Language classes, starting on April 12th and April 14th. So that's a Tuesday class and Thursday class at 2:30 in the afternoon. So every Tuesday and Thursday for English as a Second Language, and every Monday and Wednesday for the writing class. And then we also just had a math class start that's now in the evening. So if you're somebody that works during the day but would really like to work on your education, we now have a math class on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 5:30.
And are most of the classes in the evenings?
Most of the classes are actually during the day, but we do have classes in the evening for English as a Second Language as well. There's one night a week on Wednesdays at the Valley Library. And if you look at the Juneau Empire today, you'll see a story about that program on the front page. And then the math class at night. But the other classes are mainly offered during the day.
And what's the cost for these classes?
The cost is free. It's the best cost. Very affordable.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's a really great resource in the community that, you know, could really help people kind of who are pursuing the next step in their career or just kind of want to brush up on their skills or maybe they want to get their GED.
And what about age ranges?
It's really amazing what we are seeing right now. We see such a big variety. We have a lot of out-of-school youth that we serve, and then there's senior citizens that we serve. It just is a huge range, and really right now we have a large group of middle-aged people who have a variety of different goals. Some just want to brush up on their skills. Others are looking to go to college, so they want to boost their scores.
Okay. Did you already mention computer classes, or do you have some going on?
No, we do have computer classes that go on every month, and one is offered during the day. It's on Mondays and Wednesdays from 9 to 11. Currently, it's an iPad class, but next month it's going to be Introduction to Using Computers. So for those of you who are out there that are brand new, you look at a computer and it strikes fear into you, this is the class for you. And then 5:30 to 7:30 on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we're going to have the basics of using Microsoft Word. And those classes are both starting in April.
Okay, if somebody wants more information, where's the best place to go, Jeff?
So you can go right down to the center, or you can go to www.serrc.org, and that would be our website, or you could call at 907-586-5718.
You mentioned something earlier. So you have facilities, correct me if I'm wrong, here in Juneau, Ketchikan, and Sitka. Yet you do have connections and tutors in, you said, Gustavus, Haines, and other communities. Is that right?
Yeah, so we are a regional program. So if there's somebody out there in one of our regional communities that really wants to increase their educational skills or they have the goal of obtaining their GED, then we look into trying to find a tutor for them if we don't already have one in that community. If somebody calls and we have one there, we're going to match them up. We'll send them some resources and get them working. And if they don't have a tutor in their community, then we're going to try to find one and establish that connection. And currently, we're actually looking for a tutor in Metlakatla because we have some people there that are interested in working on getting their GED.
And what skills should that volunteer have in working with a GED?
Yeah, so we usually like to look for somebody who has some kind of a background in education, but that's not always the case. You know, we can't always find someone with that qualification. So a lot of times it's a college degree or just relevant experience. So it's really, we have a wide range of people who come on as tutors.
And do you need tutors here in Juneau?
Yeah, we always like to have tutors here in Juneau. We do do tutor matching. And also, we're just always looking for volunteers, especially with our English as a Second Language program. And for some of our learners who can't come on a regular basis during the daytime, it's good to set them up with a tutor match, maybe if you can meet on the weekend. So we're always looking for volunteers and tutors.
Okay. Jeff, give us the contact info once more, please.
So again, it's online at www.serrc.org. And then the phone number is 907-586-5718, or just stop down at 210 Ferry Way right past City Hall.
And if one Googled SERRC or CERC or the Southeast?
Yeah, Southeast Regional Resource Center or just the Learning Connection.
Okay, they'd probably find you pretty fast.
Yeah, they'll find us.
All right, Jeff Smith, he's the Adult Basic Education Coordinator with CERC. Anything else you want to add, Jeff?
No, just feel free to stop by or give us a call, and we'd love to help you work and meet your education goals.
Great. Thanks, Jeff.
Thank you.
Support comes from Treadwell Ice Arena, offering an adult hockey clinic March 26th from 4 until 5 p.m. and March 27th from 1:30 until 2:30 p.m. No experience is necessary, and all abilities are welcome. Those interested are encouraged to sign up early. Helmets, breezers, elbow pads, gloves, shin guards, sticks, and jerseys are all available and offered on a first-come, first-served basis. More information at 586-0410.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on Monday, March 21st, 2016. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 13 minutes until the top of the hour. Joining me now in the studio is Nancy DeTrini, the Executive Director of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
And it's not even Thursday.
It's not. I'm totally discombobulated. It's Monday. This is like Arts Up Mini.
It's a mini, because we're only going to talk about one topic, mostly.
Yeah, which is the Wonderheads.
Wonderheads are tonight. Yes, this is a, it's kind of mask theater, and I believe it's wordless, so if you don't speak English, you can still come in and get the whole picture. Betsy Sims was just overdoing getting their sound and stuff, and she said it's delightful and very sweet and a very interesting little story. So it's a thing called In the Middle of Everywhere. This is a story of a little girl and an older man and I think a monster. So it's probably best for ages 6 and above. But this is the last event of our series for this year. This group comes from Portland. They make these big masks, which is what they wear. And after the event, they will invite people up on the stage to look at the masks and ask them questions about it and talk a little bit about what goes into mask theater things, because I think it's a little different than usual.
I was just looking at the website, and they're striking.
They're
just beautiful. It sort of reminded me of the giant puppet project that we did here in town,
mm-hmm.
In a sense, and on that scale anyway.
Yeah, are sort of described as a mixture of Maurice Sendak and Pixar and Dr. No. So if you can sort of get that mushed into your head, that sort of a thing. I don't know if you remember, years ago we had a group out of Portland called Imago Theater, and they were like full body costumes and really giant big things. And I think these are sort of coming from the same angle as that, being also from Portland. But I'm very excited about it, and I hope people will come. And what I was going to offer is, like, let's say the next, say, I didn't warn the staff about this. But let's just say the next 20 callers, you call and you'll get $10 off your ticket price. How about that? Which means that some of the kids are going to go for free. Yeah, but we don't want those little bitty kids.
What a great go-see theater, Monday night entertainment,
and
educational.
One of the things I will say is that the Gold Medal is also playing, and it's one of their biggest games. So if you're a Gold Medal fan, you're probably there instead. But there may be members of your family who are not Gold Medal fans, and they could be doing this at the same time.
What number should they call?
They should call 586-2787 and tell them that they heard it on KTOO. That Nancy said so.
They're probably listening. How could they not be listening to their fearless leader on the radio, Nancy?
Because they're busy selling tickets.
And that number is also 586-ARTS.
Yes, so if you forget ever and you need to call the Arts Council, just remember 586-ARTS, so you can do that. But, yeah, we're very excited about having this group here, and we do try at the Arts Council to provide things for families and things that other organizations can't bring. And this would be one of those things. It's supported by a grant that these people were in Petersburg last on Saturday night, and they're going to leave here tomorrow morning bright and early and go to Skagway. So this is a big tour of the state that we're doing with
okay.
them. We're excited.
7 o'clock tonight for mm-hmm. discounted tickets. Call 586-ARTS in the next 20 minutes.
We'll see you there.
Thank you so much, Nancy. You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. It's there's about 8 minutes left until the top of the hour, and joining me on the phone now is Bob Roses. He is part of the National Guard Alaska Military Youth Academy. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Hi, thanks for having me on. Yes, I am the director for the Military Youth Academy.
Okay, well, it's nice to have you here. Mr. Roses, tell us a little bit about what this program is.
Well, the Military Youth Academy has been in existence now. This is our 21st year. And what we are a second chance program for youth between the ages of 16 and 18 that have officially dropped out of school. So it's an opportunity to come to us for a 22-week residential quasi-military program where they, hopefully while they're there, will learn a little bit about self-discipline and self-worth and self-direction, some job skills, and also work on their academics to try to either earn up to 7.5 high school credits or get their GED or get ready to go back to high school. So some of them actually earn both a high school diploma and a GED at the same time.
And you're up there at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, is that right?
Right. We're in the old guard base called Camp Carroll out on the Jaybear section of, on the Fort Ridge side of Jaybear.
All right. And about how many students do you have enrolled right now?
Well, currently we are in cycle break. We had a class that just graduated at the end of February, and we had 42 of those cadets stay with us for another month to go through a vocational training program, which if we have time, I'll tell you about that. But our next class is currently going through enrollment right now and recruitment, and we will be starting that class on March 30th is when they come to the program, and we're anticipating enrolling 224.
All right. And I read somewhere that's about 17.5 months. Is that right? Like almost 2 years?
No, what it is 22 weeks. It's 5.5 months in residential status. And then once they graduate from the program, we track them for 12 months. They have to report into us, let us know if they're going to school, whether they join the military, whether they have a job, or whether they go on some kind of vocational training. So we track them for 12 months after they've left the program as part of our post-residential. So if you include the post-residential with the residentials, it's 17.5 months.
I see. Tell us a little bit about a day in the life at school there. What's it like?
Well, the day in the life of the school, if you've ever seen any TV program about what it's like in basic training for the military,
mm-hmm.
That's pretty much what it is. We shake them out of the sack somewhere between 5:30 and 6 o'clock in the morning. They get up and they go out and they do somewhere between 30 and 45 minutes of physical activity, exercising, learning how to march, learning how to follow orders. And then they go back and they take their showers, and then they go up to the dining facility and have their breakfast. And then if it's during the academic portion, because we don't do academics for the first 3 weeks because we're testing them, trying to find out where their educational level is so we can place them in the proper classes. And if it's during the academic time, then they will go to class and attend 4 90-minute classes a day. And then in the evening, they have study hall. And during that time, they're also taught how to take care of proper hygiene, how to take care of their clothing. They're required to do all their own laundry. They're required to make their own bunks and keep everything in order just like you would in a military academy setting.
And is it 16 to 18-year-olds, give or take?
But they have to be at least 16 on the first day, and they cannot be 19 on the first day. So, yes, between 16 and 18, but by the time some of them graduate, some will be 19, but not very many.
And give us an example again. You touched on it, but what is the kind of student that does well in your program or might do well in your program?
Well, we have found through the years that we have all varieties of students that end up being fairly successful in the program. It's a voluntary program. They cannot be ordered to go there by a judge or by a probation officer or any of that kind of thing. They have to volunteer to sign up, and at any given time, if they decide they've had enough and want to leave, many of them want to do that. And so what we do is we have a process of checkout that they need to follow, and there's about 12 steps they need to go through. And hopefully, while they're engaging with one of those 12 adults, somebody will be able to instill in them the idea that they need to stay because it's in their best interest. So We don't refuse putting them out, but we try to make it as difficult as possible so that hopefully somebody will talk them down from that emotional situation they're in and get them to stay, because we know it's going to be a life-changing event for them.
And it seems like your target audience, let's say a listener right now, might be somebody who's 16 or over, or about to be 16 or over. They've dropped out of high school, but they want to get their GED. Is that correct?
Well, the GED or their high school diploma. We are a Northwest accredited school, so if they come to us with 12 credits, we are able to get them, if they're in the right area. If they came to us with 12 credits in PE, obviously they're not going to be able to graduate. But if they have 12 credits in the appropriate areas, we can actually issue them a high school diploma that's signed by me and signed by the governor. And it meets all the standards of the state of Alaska as well as all the Northwest accreditation standards. So some do earn high school diploma, but most will earn their GED.
Sounds very interesting, Mr. Roses. I wish we had more time. But again, the next class begins on March 30th. Is that right?
March 30th, yes. And the cadets that are coming to us from out of town, most of them will fly in on the evening of the 29th.
Okay, if somebody wanted to become part of this class or get more information, who should they call and when and how?
The best way to do is to get online and look at the Alaska Military Youth Academy, and it will have a button that they can click on to get information. They'll have another button that they can click on to start the enrollment process.
All right, that's the Alaska Military Youth Academy, and Bob Roses is the director. Bob, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the call.
Anytime. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Tune in tomorrow, same time, same frequency.